Taz and Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Mike and Pierno across the way. Bogish with your updates. An hour left to play with right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time we go. DeMarco Farr will join us. We'll talk a little Rams football later on this hour to close out the program. But what do you need to know here on this Tuesday morning? Let's get to it. Here we go, the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
Ezekiel Elliott is in Cabo. Jerry Jones speaks.
Cabo, for good pronunciation there. So, yes, Ezekiel Elliott holding out. The Dallas Cowboys are in California in training camp. And Jerry Jones, courtesy of CBS 11, met with the media discussing Elliott's holdout. Take a listen.
Emmett had participated in a Super Bowl, being the first rushing champ. Now, this is very important. First time ever a rushing champion was on a Super Bowl winning team. The point there is you don't have to have a rushing champion to win a Super Bowl. But Emmett was the first one to do it. And that's one of the dilemmas at running back is that the league knows that you can win Super Bowls and not have the Emmett Smith back there or not have Zeke back there. Consequently, when we are looking and putting Zeke's contract in place, we've got to realize that the ultimate goal is to win the Super Bowl. And so you've got to do all of the things along with having Zeke that allow you to have other players so that you can win the Super Bowl.
Well, there you have it. So it basically said trying to minimize the impact of Elliott. We all know the importance of Ezekiel Elliott, Taz. You know, trying to talk tough if you're Jerry Jones. They're looking to try and get back to the playoffs. He would go on in the same interview saying that Dak Prescott will get paid. They will seek a contract extension with him. Elliott continues to hold out, looking for that new extension, new deal.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how long this thing goes here for the Dallas Cowboys. You know, and, you know, with Jerry Jones doing that, he kind of, I mean, more or less, in my opinion, he draws a line in the sand, basically telling Elliott from afar, hey, look at, you know, we're going to onward and upward, with or without you. This is how it's going to go here. Onward and upward, with or without you. We don't need you to win. Does he really mean that? Probably not. I mean, how would you think that about the NFL's leading rusher last year in 2018? I mean, the guy was top of the heap. So, you know, he's a very important cog in the wheel for the Dallas Cowboys offense and for Dak Prescott. You know, you need him. You need that running game. And you know, and you know, listen, I mean, some would think that a lot of what Jones is saying is true. I mean, because the NFL and the way it's been with running backs, that it's been such a heavy, offensively, such a pass-first type of league. You know, so we've seen that over time, and that's definitely what's going on. But you still need, you know, a major running back. And we both kind of agreed on that earlier. And I just really believe in the running game. I think it's very important. So, you know, look at the depth chart. You know, I don't think he's got the guys. You know, even though signing Alfred Morris, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, it's no one there. It's like Zeke. As far as running the football.
Yeah, no question about it. And so here we stand. August 6th is the big date. Elliott, you know, would lose a year. You know, in terms of accruing a year toward NFL free agency. If he does not report to the Cowboys by August 6th, that's something him and his camp do not want to do. He's got 2 years and 12.9 remaining on that rookie deal. So it's not like he's got 1 year left. He's got 2 years left at $12.9 million. So, you know, different situation than Michael Thomas down in New Orleans, who's severely underpaid. I'm not telling you that Elliott's well paid. I mean, he is. I mean, but for the level of caliber player he is not. Put it to you that way. But we'll see exactly what the Dallas Cowboys do here, Taz. It doesn't seem like they're willing to negotiate with Elliott. And I as I mentioned earlier, as we had a long range of discussion about this to kick off the program, I really think it has to come down to the trust factor. I don't think the Cowboys trust Ezekiel Elliott to give him a contract extension on top of the 2 years that he has left on his rookie deal and, you know, and lengthen that out because I think they're fearful of his behavior away from the football field.
Yeah, and his deal's not up. I mean, that's the thing. That's the big shining light. His deal, meaning Zeke, Zeke Elliott, his deal's not up. Where Prescott and Amari Cooper, okay, their deals are more or less, and they're still out there at camp. They're not holding up camp. They're not causing, and they're also two gigantic offensive stars like Zeke is. So, you know, I understand the guy wants to get more money, and that's what you're getting with a lot of running backs. The better running backs, they want to get paid now because their legs don't stay fresh for long, and they become damaged goods real quick. And I respect that. I understand that. But, you know, I mean, you can't expect the Dallas Cowboys to jump through hoops to get him signed right now. His deal's not up. You know, he's still got some time.
Yeah, he does. He does. And we'll see exactly where this does end between Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, he's training down in Cabo. His agent has a house down in Cabo. Who knows what the hell he's doing as the Cowboys are at work out in California. All right, next.
Number two.
Dolphins fire offensive line coach 1 week in the camp.
Yeah, strange one, Taz. We talked about last hour, Pat Flaherty, a longtime NFL offensive line coach. I think he was with the Giants for 12 years, 49ers for a season, couple years with the Jacksonville Jaguars, his coach collegiately as well. I mean, he's been around the game for a long, long time. New head coach down there in Miami and Flores, and he takes over a program in Brian Flores, former Patriot assistant coach, or I should say assistant head coach, defensive coordinator, however way you looked at it, what his official title up there under Bill Belichick was. We said before, I don't know what it is, and we probably never know. I'm not saying it's anything like over-the-top bad.
Right.
My point being is that there had to be some kind of connectivity issue between, you know, Flores and the offensive line coach or the offensive staff. I don't know. Is it just because the offensive line was getting pushed around in practice, so he fires the offensive line coach? Does that make a lot of sense?
It doesn't to me, no, especially after you, Brian Flores, you're the new head coach, and you 6 months ago hired this guy. You did not inherit Pat Flaherty. So, you know, you hired him to be your O-line coach, and now you basically relieved him of his duties, and you're promoting the analyst, Dave Gulmiero, to offensive line coach. So the whole thing's kind of like a little strange, but, as we said earlier, who knows what's going on behind the scenes there? You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
You got to give the guy more than four practices, I think, in just my opinion, to see how his O-line works.
Unless there was concern going into it, and those concerns were not rectified early on in camp.
Could be. Again, we don't know. That could be.
I mean, maybe there were concerns in mini camps. Maybe there's the concern, you know, early on after the NFL draft. Well, you know, in the mandatory mini camps and everything. And so Flores had this concern and said, all right, I'll give him a little bit more time. And then, you know, had a guy on the staff that he trusted, that he's familiar with, who, as you mentioned before, failed at the job up there in Foxborough. But there is a familiarity there. And then did not see it turn the way that he would like early on here in camp and decided to move on.
Yeah, it's apparently so Ian Rappaport, he reported that basically he's hearing that Flaherty's issues, they kind of went back a few months, because the ability to coach in a system with the offensive coordinator, Chad O'Shea, that's part of the issue, too.
So, I mentioned earlier, working with the other offensive staff.
Right, correct. So, there it is.
So, there you have it. Yeah. In terms of Pat Flaherty being out down in Miami with the Dolphins. All right, next.
Number three.
Marcus Stroman says his initial frustration with trade had nothing to do with the Mets.
Yeah, so there was a report out of Toronto that he kind of threw a temper tantrum when he learned that he was being traded to the Mets. This is Marcus Stroman now, the new starting pitcher for the Mets. And, that was not necessarily – he had envisions of joining an extending team. If he wanted to go to – if he was going to go to New York, he wanted to go to the Yankees and not the Mets. He said that is not necessarily the case. Let's hear from Stroman yesterday, conference call, getting introduced as a New York Met. Take a listen.
Definitely shocked. I definitely was expecting to get moved to some team at some point, obviously before the deadline, just because of all the rumors. So hearing it was the Mets, I was shocked. The commotion was in a discussion that I had with some of our coaches, some of the higher ups in our org, and it was kind of just like an exit meeting, and I was just kind of voicing my opinion, and I didn't like how a couple of things were handled along the process, and that was it.
So there you have it. You believe him?
Yeah, I do. I believe that it had nothing to do with the Mets because as soon as the news happened, I mean, it had to be shortly after. I mean, he's tweeting pictures of himself. You know, he grew up on Long Island. It seems like he grew up a Met fan. And he's tweeting out pictures of himself when he was a young child wearing a New York Mets satin, you know, cool baseball jacket. You know, like, he's tweeting pictures of that he's wearing number 7. He wore number 7 at Duke. He wore number 6, I believe, with the Blue Jays. So, like, you know, so they got him his number. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. My gut tells me that he's telling the truth. This had nothing to do with the Mets. Do you believe him?
No, I don't really believe him. And he did go ahead yesterday that he went to both Met and Yankee games growing up. I was trying to rack my brain in terms of him throwing a commotion in terms of the process. He just told you that he expected to get moved, right? He told you that he thought it was going to go to a contending team. So what exactly did the Blue Jays do wrong as an organization for him to make a commotion in the Toronto Blue Jays clubhouse? I don't know. I mean, he said it meant more like an exit meeting. I don't think they were critical of him pitching. I mean, pitched to an under 3 ERA. I don't think they're telling him what he didn't do. I think they're probably thanking him for everything that he did for the Blue Jays organization. I don't know. I mean, but... I'm not going to get all that. If I'm a Met fan, I wouldn't get all that hot and bothered by it initially anyway. I mean, he's a Long Island guy. Yeah. You know, he wanted to go to a contending team. He's not.
Right.
If he wanted to be a Yankee, he's not going to be a Yankee. Maybe a year and a half from now when he hits free agency, he'll be a Yankee. Well, or maybe he'll sign a long-term deal with the Mets. Who the hell knows? But yeah. I'm sure he's happy to be pitching closer back to home.
Yeah, well, he's good till the end of 2020, end of the year. And the Mets, I'm hoping this happens. They seem like they're trying to go all in now. But it seems like they might assume or think they have some shot to do something impressive next year. Which they got to fix their defense. They got to fix the bullpen. They got to fix a lot of stuff. But Marcus Stroman's dad, I was reading some stuff he talked to Newsday. And kind of to play off a little bit of the point you just made about contenders and stuff. He assumed he was going to be moved to either the Astros or the Yankees, and he kind of was fired up, his dad said, if he was going to go to the Yankees a little bit. But he also loved being in Toronto. He said his son's heart was in Toronto. He loved it there.
Well, he tweeted out the other day, Savage.
Yeah.
Playing off what I forget exactly how he phrased it, but playing off, you know, that back and forth that Aaron Boone had with the umpire.
That's right. Yeah,
right?
That's right.
I got Savages in the dugout, Savages up at the plate, whatever it was.
My guys are Savages up right, meaning in the box.
Yeah, correct. So, Stroman did tweet that out the other day when he was still a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. So, I mean, listen, he's going to cut off at the knees. He's going to be wearing number 7. McNeil wears number 6 for the Mets. So he gets, as you mentioned, the number, that he had down at Duke?
He had that at Duke, yeah.
So the one thing is he's predominantly a ground ball pitcher this year. The Mets' infield defense has not been particularly good. That's something that needs to improve moving forward in order to take full advantage of what, you know, Marcus Stroman is now. And he's kind of developed. I was talking to a guy yesterday in terms of what led to the uptick of Stroman this year, where his ERA is down. It's under 3. Injury ravaged season a year ago. And, scouts are looking at it. You know, he's throwing a lot more sliders. He gave up, I think, on the 4-seam fastball. He's predominantly throwing a 2-seam fastball, throwing a lot lower in the zone. He's not as less reliant on the strikeout, only 7 strikeouts per 9. And he's inducing a lot more ground balls. So that's what led to, and you hope that continues with the Mets, and you hope that the Mets defensively are able to handle everything that's going to come their way as well.
That's what I'm hoping, that the Mets can handle the ground balls that are going to be hit.
Yeah, right.
That's my concern, to be blunt. So, yeah, it's been a little rough defensively, and I don't know. We'll see. It's a transition for sure. But a guy like Stroman, he's a hell of a player, a first-time All-Star this past year, you know. Look, me as a Met fan, anytime we get a really good player, I'm happy about it. I understand some Met fans would disagree, only because, they didn't get the resources maybe at that moment that you could have gotten, and then you move Vargas to a division rivalry in the freaking Phillies, which is like, what are we doing? The Phillies, God.
Does that really bother you that much that Vargas goes to the Phillies?
It's just the Phillies. It's just like if a Yankee would have, starting pitch for the Yankee would move to the Sox, the Red Sox, you wouldn't be exactly glowing about it. That's how I feel. I'm not exactly happy about it because I don't like the Phillies. I grew up hating the Phillies.
I just don't think the Phillies are going anywhere, right?
Well, I know that, but it's just that for them to get a good pitcher like Vargas, who I was talking to you months ago off air saying how much I hated him. And then, you know, he started playing really well, pitching really well.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He did pitch well last 12 starts. His ERA, I think, is about 3.2. And we'll see what he does now for the Philadelphia Phillies as the Mets save themselves about $2 million in cash and get, in essence, what is a minor league catcher and a 26-year-old from the Phillies organization. Oh, so there you have it. 855-212-4227. The three big storylines that you need to know here on this Tuesday morning. Flaherty out as offensive line coach down there in Miami. You've got the scenario of, as we just discussed, Marcus Stroman not upset about being a Met. That's what he's telling you. And Ezekiel Elliott holding out. He's down in Cabo as training camp continues for the Dallas Cowboys and every other NFL team across the country for the Cowboys out there in California. Correct.
Cabo.
It's 8:16 in the AM, 5:16 Pacific. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
This is 16-year MLB veteran Chase Utley, and you're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico, go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Yesterday, Al Dukes was on the Biseglia podcast.
Oh, really? Yesterday? You had Al on?
Yeah, he had video and all.
Yeah, it dropped later today.
Wow. Let me get this straight. You had video and all.
We had all.
Well, wait a minute. So you're recording an audio podcast, and what kind of video?
I just took a still shot off his Facebook page.
Yeah, he had video
and added audio behind it.
He had video to promote it.
Wow.
Yes. It wasn't live video. It was just I stole his Facebook profile picture.
Wow, you really are a talented guy. So what the deal is, okay, so did you guys record the podcast in the same room or phone Jones? How'd you do it?
Same room.
Wow. That's the high-end podcasting, Moose, when you do that.
Yes.
That means you have access to any kind of studio microphone you want and board.
So what time did you record it?
This was Friday afternoon. Friday at 10, 11 o'clock.
So why did it take freaking
show?
Three days to drop it. Why?
Because I had to add the content from my stories on the road, which I recorded on Saturday, and then I mixed it down with the interview I had with Al, and now I'm putting it out Tuesday. I think Monday. I like doing Tuesday over Monday because I think Monday everybody's kind of just getting back in the swing of the week. Tuesday, everybody a little more settled.
It's amazing, Moose, that he has time to even do anything with our show, this guy. Huh? Isn't that something?
Well, I'm happy for him. It's a good job by him.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely getting a lot of Taz Show fans, too, that are listening to the podcast. I promoted it for him in my podcast.
I have had a bunch of Taz Show fans reach out to me and say they enjoy the podcast, and they found out through your podcast, correct?
And the thing is, too, like, when I hear people drop a podcast, then they record it on a Friday and it drops. So I understand what you did there, and it records, you drop it like 3-4 days later. That drives me crazy. See, like, my show's like what you do with this show, with Taz and Moose. It drops every day. Like, so I recorded a podcast yesterday, and Brian, my producer for that show, he dropped it 10 minutes later. There's no editing. We do no editing. I record it live to tape, just like Moose and I do here live to tape. You should maybe work on that, Mike.
No.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, the problem is I need to record on Saturdays. That's the only free time I have to record.
Plus, it's a little less. It's a little.
It's not time sensitive.
Time sensitive. That's exactly right.
He goes, yeah, no.
It doesn't have to be like he's not talking about topical issues.
Yeah,
about stories from the road.
Right. They're not going anywhere.
I think what we call that in the podcasting realm is evergreen content. That's the word you're both looking for. Evergreen. So I understand.
I think evergreen. I look at evergreen as being more generic.
No, evergreen means that it's stories that are evergreen. They'll last forever. Those stories he's saying with these Uber people are evergreen. I won an award for this. I kind of know what I'm talking about, bro.
No. I'm not saying. I just have a negative connotation to it. Well, we all do it.
What? I won an award doing it.
I understand you won an award.
Good.
You won an award for vocabulary?
No, podcasting.
I understand. We're talking about the definition of award.
No. Well, the award is
from
the Communicators Organization, and I wouldn't. I have it. I'll take pictures. I'll show you. It looks like an Emmy.
I'm not
freaking that, thing's beautiful.
One has nothing to do with the other.
I don't know. I won an award. I'm pretty legit.
I know you did.
I'm on the cusp of 700.
I look at Evergreen as being more of a negative connotation for me.
Oh, God Almighty. Evergreen means it's evergreen. It's exactly what the word means. It lasts forever.
I know. I just look at it differently. That's all. From my vantage.
But the way you're looking at it is not the. It's not correct. Let's say you and I did a topic right now. We recorded a topic, talked about the NFL best linebackers ever. Yeah. And you and I were spitballing this, and we were talking about it, and we gave off top five each. Ooh. And then we put it as a separate podcast that was a 20-minute podcast.
Yeah, no, that's evergreen content. I'm not denying that.
Let's say you and Monzo do a podcast about Kelso. Remember the great horse Kelso,
yeah,
or Secretariat.
I'm not saying
evergreen.
I never said that you're wrong. I'm just saying
I'm wrong.
No, I said I look at it as more negative. I don't look at that as what Mike's
negative?
Doing. I don't know. I just look at the word evergreen as being negative. That's all.
That's used in meetings with big shots. I've been in podcasts.
I'm looking from my own vantage point. I don't like the term evergreen. I just look at it as
generic
and boring.
You're entitled to it.
That's all.
No,
I know what it
not,
means. I understand what it means.
I know you do. You're a wordsmith. I hear you every day.
I don't know. I just don't. I look at it as more kind of like, eh.
So what is evergreen content? What's a better word for you that's not negative?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of that. I don't know if I have one for you.
Timeless?
No. I don't know. I don't think I have one for you, Taz.
All right.
It's a good question. I don't have one for you.
No problem.
I don't know.
You guys should do a podcast, you and Monzo, about your favorite horses.
I don't think that'll do much.
Why? People that listen to it want to hear, like, you and Monzo both are experts on horse racing.
Yeah, I don't know.
What your favorite horse is.
I don't know if people are going to sit there and listen to that.
Why? No,
I
think you're wrong. Well, your stuff is more topical about the actual races, like when
Yes, correct. We're talking about stake races, what's going on here, over in Europe, stuff
but
like that.
I think you have a chance to do something with a market that in podcasting is not gigantic. It's gigantic for horse racing with topical about the races coming up. But I think that if you did something for horse racing fans to talk about the history or the great horses of the past.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you need like kind of like the guest to be able to add a little bit more to it.
No, you guys are both communicators.
I'm not saying you add. It adds a little bit of a flavor to it. When you're talking about the history of horse racing. You're talking about horses you never saw race.
Dude, you have not. Doesn't matter. It's a fandom. You have knowledge. You're very knowledgeable. So is Brian about horse racing.
If you could add people that have actually, saw them in training and everything like that. But horse racing is dependent on gambling.
No, I know it is, but they're all not everybody. Not everybody. I know that 99.9% of horse racing fans are gamblers.
That's what the
they also
all about.
Would like to hear. It's not everything. I need more gambling ideas. They might want to hear a podcast about something about some great horses of the past.
No, that's fair.
Or great jockeys. You know what I mean? Like that type of thing. That's what I'm saying. I don't. I'm not a big fan with podcasting because I think that's kind of oversaturated. Every topic, no matter what genre, guest on podcasting is the most played out thing, in my opinion. I'm a firm believer in topic driven and that which is not evergreen, and carry the show he or she themselves. I dropped the podcast just 50 minutes by myself.
No, that's great.
Sitting in the studio just spitballing, wrestling.
That's fantastic.
The Taz show.
That's great.
Damn right. Episode 692, I think, Andrew.
About topical issues.
Not always. I do stuff that I'll do an evergreen topic.
Okay.
Where I'll talk about. I might go back and talk about an old wrestling big pay per view or opponents of mine. Or I do a ton of non-topical alone.
All right. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good. That's great.
That's right.
I think those are like if I'm looking at talking about a great race. Those were at the track. They add a little bit more color, flavor, flair to it.
I'm telling you, though, it's a different viewpoint. If you and Brian, because you guys are both students of the game, you guys will give a fan perspective.
I get it. You know, God rest his soul, the great, William Knack, who covered Secretariat, wrote a great book on him. A legendary writer, legendary horse racing enthusiast. I mean, to hear him describe his Belmont Stakes, as you can see it on the 30 for 30, or the Sports Century, I should say, for Secretariat, it's just off the charts.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy slept outside Secretariat's stall the morning of the Belmont Stakes and slipped by a tree. I mean, to have that kind of, hear those kind of stories, you know, just add something to it. But, yeah, I don't think you need a guess for every single
time. No, you don't. Andrew, why don't you, I mean, Andrew Bogus, ladies and gentlemen, it's the latest sports update. Why don't you, okay, go ahead, let it roll.
Yeah, hit it.
Yeah, why don't you, hit it, please. Why don't you, Andrew, everybody else has podcasts that can speak. Why don't you have one? You're a communicator.
Oh, there's too many podcasts.
It's overset.
No one needs me.
You're a baseball aficionado. I mean, I can pitch you and Pete the Body doing one together. That would be pretty entertaining, I think. You and Pete?
Yeah. I like queso.
That would be great, I think. No, maybe just you alone. How about
me
that?
Me and computerized Pete.
No.
Well, me and Pete drops.
If you did a podcast, what would it be on?
I've already done the baseball one, which didn't go well. So
I know you did a show. I didn't know it was a podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So that failed.
Yeah, that failed.
Right, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
Right, sorry to brought it up.
Still stung over that. My bad. There's legal reasons, non-competes.
Alrighty.
Stuff like that.
Getting more sticky. My bad. My apologies.
My bads are out
Rams
the window.
Football.
Okay, we're doing that right now?
Yeah, no, not right now. Okay. We got an update. Here you go. Bogus, take it away.
Hey, guys. Here's your report. It's sponsored by Wrangler Performance Series, a collection of jeans and pants featuring a Comfort Flex waistband and denim that flexes for comfort. Wrangler Performance Series, try on a pair today. Ezekiel Elliott is going to Cabo, not Oxnard, California. The Cowboy running back still holding out and now will stay in shape at his agent's Mexico home, which he did during his 2017 suspension. Zeke and the Cowboys said to have traded proposals recently, but no extension is imminent. Without Elliott, Dallas has just one running back in camp that got a regular season carry last season, so they're signing veteran Alfred Morris, who played for them in 2016 and 17. In 18, he was a Niner. The Dolphins firing O-line coach Pat Flaherty just 5 months after he joined Brian Flores' staff. The line had been an issue since the spring. Veteran assistant Dave DiGuglielmo takes over. And the Texans have given corner Jonathan Joseph a raise from $2.9 million to $4 million. Joseph also gets a $1.5 million signing bonus. The Blue Jays completed the hat trick yesterday, adding Bo Bichette to Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Kevin Biggio, three sons of three stars. The 21-year-old Bichette singled in his first big league at-bat. Biggio, though, had the biggest swing last night.
2-1 pitch and high in the air, deep right field. That one's going to be between the white lines, and that one is gone. Kevin Biggio goes deep onto the porch behind the right field wall. His eighth home run of the season has given the Blue Jays a 4-3 lead.
As heard on Blue Jays radio, Biggio had just missed a homer down the right field line earlier in that at-bat, Toronto eventually winning in KC 7-3. The Tigers got a 7-2 win in Anaheim. Veteran righty Jordan Zimmermann earns his first W since last September. The Dodgers fell in Colorado 9-1, and manager Dave Roberts pulled Jock Peterson in the eighth inning for not running out a grounder to first. The Padres dumped the O's 8-1. Fernando Tatis Jr., Franmil Reyes homering on the first two pitches of the bottom of the first. And the Nationals dropped the Braves 6-3. Anthony Rendon, a tie-breaking grand slam in the sixth. Atlanta's NL East lead is down to 4.5 games. And the U.S. Soccer Federation releasing financial data yesterday, said to be confirmed by an independent accountant. It shows the women's national team made more money than the men from 2010 through 2018. A spokesperson for the women suing U.S. Soccer for equal pay says the data is, quote, utterly false. It remains true that men make more money per game and get higher bonuses for wins and ties than the women's team. Guys?
All right. Thank you, Andrew. We're going to continue to run around the National Football League. Up next, the Rams coming off a disappointing Super Bowl loss. DeMarco Farr, a very good lineman, Taz, in his day was DeMarco Farr. Now a sideline reporter for the Rams out there in Los Angeles is going to join us. Where did he go? Washington? I believe it was Washington, right?
I know he's a hell of a lineman. You're right. He was, and he's great on the air too. He's very high, exuberant guy.
Yeah, it was Washington.
Entertaining. It was Washington.
Yeah,
okay.
He's going to join us. We'll talk about the Rams as they try and get back and this time win the Super Bowl. What are their challenges? We'll take that next. It's Taz Moose on this Tuesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Coast to coast, pillar to post. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right. We head to Rams camp now. And DeMarco Farr joins us, a Los Angeles Rams sideline reporter, Super Bowl champion, fresh off the elliptical. He's up early out there in West Coast. Hey, DeMarco, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
What's up, man?
What's happening, fellas?
What's going on?
I love donuts. I got to use the elliptical, man. You know? Come on.
That's it, man. Bring the calories in and then just burn them up. I feel
that's
you.
I play for the tie every day. Come on now.
There you go. I love it.
That's a good line. That is a good line.
That is funny.
You know, DeMarco, how about this team following what was, you'd have to imagine, a disappointing Super Bowl performance in offensively in what the Patriots threw at them, how they handled it, all the way around. You know, this offseason, but going into now with camp beginning, what about this Rams team trying to get back there and this time winning it?
You know, we talked a lot about that with them the last couple of days, and they haven't forgot about it. You know, the number one question is, when did you flip the script from 2018 to 2019? And they said, about the first time we started OTAs and minicamps. So they carried it all the way through, just like a Super Bowl champion would do. Whether you won or lost, you're going to have to forget about last season and move into 2019. But they haven't forgot about it. It's going to drive them. They got to the Super Bowl. It's where they wanted to be, but they didn't win it. And they didn't perform as well as they would like on offense. So it's not just the players. Even Sean McVay feels the same way. And he's not shy about telling you. He wants to get back to that big stage, probably against the Patriots, to have that rematch so they can get that win or at least a better showing. But, you know, Belichick's a monster. Belichick has seen you 10 times over. He knows your schemes, he knows your philosophies, and he knows the origin of. So it's going to be tough to beat him in that situation. But one day after that game, the day after the Super Bowl, Sean McVay became a better football coach. So let's hope they become a better football team because of that.
Well, DeMarco, it's funny you mentioned McVay because I was just fixing to ask you about that. Because, like, so what do you, if you had to put it in a nutshell, what do you think Coach McVay learned from everything last season?
I think he's, how can I say this? I think he's confident in his scheme. I think he's confident in what he does. But I think that he knows now he's going to have to open it up a little bit more. He's going to have to be a little more varied in his personnel groups. Because the one thing I did get from all the coaches that I know on the way up, and especially at the Super Bowl, you can't be this good in one personnel group. It's just impossible to do. But I'm like, we are sitting here in Atlanta in the Super Bowl, guys. He just did it. Well, it defies belief. But then after the game, it kind of made sense. You're going to have to give people more tight end sets. You may have to be a little trickier with Todd Gurley coming out of the backfield to get him free when you have 16, 17 weeks of film. So he's going to have to expand his playbook a little bit more, but he's never going to give up what he does best.
What about Gurley here? He doesn't want to talk about the knee. How big of an issue is the knee with Todd Gurley?
You know, he's 24. Everybody in the NFL has something they have to deal with. Look at Gronk. Gronk had braces on every part of his body, but it never stopped him. So Todd's got a knee issue. It is an issue. You're going to have to treat it. You're going to have to go home at night. You're going to have to treat yourself like you're 34 instead of 24, but he's going to be just fine. You should have seen him on the first day of practice. The guy's got burst. He's huge. He looks like the Todd Gurley of old, not an old Todd Gurley.
Interesting. DeMarco, so Clay Matthews, so far in camp, I mean, you know, great player, obviously, great backer. You know, thoughts on him so far, what you've seen and heard, and you know, what your expectations, you personally, that you think Clay will bring to the table for the Rams?
I was a fan. I liked watching dude play when he was in Green Bay. Right. I mean, he was a monster. Jeff Fisher brought the Rams to Green Bay, and it was with Nick Foles at quarterback. This was the Nick Foles experiment. So we brought it to Green Bay, and Clay Matthews, I'm telling you, ended the era in one game. We thought he was trying to bury the guy, really. He was just that dominant. He was all over the field. So if that guy still exists, because something happened in Green Bay, the coach got fired, Aaron Rodgers started to pop off, so there was a lot going on in Green Bay, so maybe that brought everybody down there. But if that guy still exists, that guy you can line up just about anywhere, and he seems to wind up on top of your quarterback at the end of the play, man, that's going to be like gangbusters with Aaron Donald. So watching him in practice, watching him warm up, he's athletic as hell. He seems like he's 25. So if we can still get, if the Rams can still get 16 straight weeks of the Clay Matthews that we used to know, wow, that's going to be big coming off the edge.
You know, DeMarco, where are the concerns then when you look at this team? I mean, obviously,
offensive
Super Bowl
line
hangover, but where do you look at this team roster-wise? What are the concerns?
You know, walking around the field the other day, and I even talked to Talib and Marcus Peters after practice, and I said, wow, this is a pretty good team, man. I mean, roster-wise, top to bottom. And they said, I said, do you guys know that? And they said, oh, yeah, we know. It is. This might be their best football team since we won the Super Bowl or since the greatest show on turf, but you got to go prove it. But if there is one weak point or when we're going to look and say that could be a weak point, it's going to be the offensive line. Roger Saffold's not here anymore, and John Sullivan, the center, has retired. So that's two veteran guys that were tasked with getting Todd Gurley free in the open field and protecting Jared Goff, now being replaced by two guys that's never started a football game before in John Noteboom and Brian Allen. So we'll see if these two guys can handle it. Physically, they'll be fine, but it's the mental game you have to worry about.
So what do you mean by the mental game they're going to have to worry about?
Well, I mean, like, as a former defensive lineman or a defensive lineman that's just not playing anymore, anytime I see a first-year starter at center, I'm going to try him. Mm. We're going to try A-gap blitzes. We're going to send everything we've got at this kid to see if we can pick it up. And if you've got a first-year starter at guard, same thing. It's going to be nothing but pass rush stunts and games to see if you can pick it up. If you can, then so be it. If not, then that's going to be your Achilles heel as an offense. But they're being trained well. Sean McVay's offense is offensive line friendly. He doesn't expect you to just man up with guys and try to push them, you know, down the field for 16 straight plays. There's going to be some things that help you, but when it's 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15, when it becomes just football, you are going to have to man up, and then we'll see if they can handle it.
You listen to Taz and Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Our special guest right now, DeMarco Farr, Los Angeles Rams sideline reporter, Super Bowl champ, man. Hey, DeMarco, so what about Cooper Kupp? He's back, you know, hell of a wide receiver, this kid. What's the deal? What are you thinking of him when you've seen him, how he's looking in camp physically? What you know, break him down for us.
The dude is Wolverine. He blew the knee in November, and he's the first day of practice, you'd never know he was hurt at all.
Wow.
This is a guy who spent the entire offseason rehabbing. I mean, he was on the sidelines while the team was practicing for minicamp, and you could tell he was chomping at the bit to get out there. So we heard day one he wasn't going to be put on the PUP, the physically unable to perform. So that was a wow. You know, he's ahead of schedule. And then the first day of practice, he's out there running routes. Not just running routes, beating people. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow. Was he ever hurt to begin with? But the guy's a fantastic healer, and he's a great football player. I think what separates him from all the other slot receivers in the NFL is how well he blocks and how smart he is. Really, your nickel better come to play when you're lining up on Cooper Kupp, because the first five steps off the line look exactly the same. You don't know if he's blocking you or trying to go past you until he's on top of you. And either way, it's going to be too late. So having him on the field is huge. Having him on the field is huge for Jared Goff. It's like a security blanket. When all breaks down or all fails, Cooper Kupp is always going to be out there for you to make a play.
You know, DeMarco, when you look at Goff, how good do you think he is? You know, last year there were a lot of highs, and then there were also some lows where you saw maybe a little bit of regression. What about Jared Goff this year, yet another year under McVay?
Well, this is where I couldn't wait. So let me ask Taz this, right? So you've seen wrestlers come and go, right?
Sure, of course.
You've seen these young guys that you can say, that guy is going to be champion someday. And either they do or they don't.
Yep.
But once they do, they start to take off and become that guy.
Sure.
Well, that's where Jared Goff is now going into year four. He's no longer the rookie that got beat up or the surprise Pro Bowler or the guy that ran McVay's offense to the Super Bowl. He's a fourth-year starter that's about to get paid. That's bigger, stronger, faster than he was a year before. All he has to do is do what he did last year, and he makes $35 million a year. This guy is ready to flip the script and become one of those elite franchise quarterbacks.
So you don't think, DeMarco, you don't think he's a product of McVay's system? You think he's better than that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was drafted by the previous staff.
No, true.
Between him and Carson Wentz, they liked it. And this is funny, man. This is the first time the scouting report was dead on. They said Carson Wentz was the guy you'll love, but they're not sure if he can stay healthy. Jared Goff in 5 years will become the better quarterback. So here we are in year four, and I think that's starting to bear out. So we'll see what both guys do. But, yeah, man, he's bigger. He's stronger. He's the California kid. He's a leader of the football team. He's a guy, too. I mean, when he's outside answering questions, he's a quarterback. When he's in the locker room, he jokes with the guys, and he's got a sense of humor just like everybody else. And they listen, and they follow him. So, and the guy's got a cannon now. I mean, with touch. So McVay got a lot of credit, but I bet this year you're going to be talking more about Jared Goff than McVay through Jared Goff.
All right, now, DeMarco, the real questions. With this, your elliptical training, what's the story here? I mean, how many minutes are we doing? Are we going a high, like, incline? Are you dogging it, going a little bit of a low? Come on, be honest. What's the skinny on this? What's the deal?
If I got a short workout, I do it for 30 minutes, and I try to make 5 miles. Top that. Come on now.
I'm impressed.
If it's a long workout, then what are you doing?
I go for an hour, and I try to make 7 miles.
That's pretty good.
You're playing weight now, and you had a motor. You play with a motor. I know that.
Absolutely.
I know how you play. What was your playing weight, like your best weight?
272.
Wow. 272.
Man, 272, and that was light.
And
okay,
you flew around the field. You flew around. I saw
Aaron Donald is ripping it up now, and he's 10 pounds lighter than I ever was.
He looks like a bodybuilder.
That's crazy.
He does.
He looks like he's cut from granite. Hulk,
and that's something else that's cool. He's out at camp. This is something new. He's never been at training camp because of all the holdouts and whatnot. So to see him get work, to have your best guy on the field, man, that's been awesome.
Now, you're up at 4 a.m. to hit the elliptical, DeMarco. So what time are you to bed at night?
It depends. When the wife lets me go to sleep.
Nice. Great answer.
That is happy perfect. Wife, happy life. That is a good answer, DeMarco. Well, we appreciate you giving us some time here early on this Tuesday morning out west. And always a pleasure having you on. And thanks again, DeMarco.
Appreciate it, man.
Of course. We're family, man. Give me a call anytime.
All right, bro. Take care, man.
DeMarco Farr. Rams.
Good dude.
Yeah, no doubt. Sideline reporter for the Rams Radio Network. A Super Bowl champion, very good defensive lineman, Taz, in his day.
He said we're family. So now you go to another level when you start spitting that out.
Correct.
So now if I need to borrow, $300-$400.
No, I don't think it's that. I don't think, yeah, right.
No,
exactly.
Think so?
No.
Don't bother doing that?
No.
You don't feel that?
Money never works out. Borrowing money.
My family, everybody. My uncles, my cousins, we're always borrowing money.
I get it. Yeah, I want to see how that conversation goes. But say, you should call up DeMarco and be like, hey, we're family. Can I have 300?
Tass is not going to borrow 400.
One follow-up question.
I need some new earbuds.
One follow-up question. You drop me 500. We're family.
Use Venmo.
Hey, cuz, you Venmo me? Right? Put it in my PayPal.
That's exactly right. A good show. We appreciate it. Where are we in the poll? Do we have any poll update in terms of
the word poll? So you're looking for a social media update, I
correct.
Assume.
Training
that's what
camp.
You're looking for. We'll get the social media update. Yes, right there. So, yeah, we put out this question earlier from our show here and our producer and his team. What should the name of our training camp football this segment be? The campgrounds, I should say. Gone gridiron camping. Easy for me to say. Gridiron camping. Go/gone camping. Right now, the campgrounds, the Kingsman provided this. 53% the leader. Gone gridiron camping's 8%, Moose. Gridiron camping's 28%. Gone/gone camping.
Go/gone.
Yeah, that one. Camping. That's 11%. It's not winning. Don't worry about it. I could say flower top camping. It's not winning. We see who the winner is.
Well, yes. Yeah. Good job by the Kingsmen firing that out there. Pierno, good job. Beseglia,
yes,
fantastic
thanks,
as always. Bogish with the updates. Taz, always wonderful, buddy.
Yes, sir. You too. Thank you.
Until tomorrow, everybody. Peace.
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here.